भगवते वासुदेवाया।
रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 8 चैप्टर 24 चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड मत्स्य द लॉर्ड्स फिश इनकार्नेशन टेक्स्ट नंबर 51 जनो जनस्य दिशते गतिं यया प्रपद्ये तदुरत्ययं तमः त्वं त्वव्ययं ज्ञानम् अमोघमञ्जसा प्रपद्यते येन जनो निजं पदम्। ट्रांसलेशन: अ मटीरियलिस्टिक सो कॉल्ड गुरु इंस्ट्रक्ट्स हिज मटीरियलिस्टिक डिसाइपल्स अबाउट economic development and sense gratification. And because of such instructions, the foolish disciples continue in the materialistic existence of ignorance. But your lordship gives knowledge that is eternal, and the intelligent person receiving such knowledge is quickly situated in his original constitutional position. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada. So-called gurus instruct their disciples for the sake of material profit. Some guru advises that one meditate in such a way that his intelligence will increase in regard to keeping his body fit for sense gratification. Another guru advises that sex is the ultimate goal of life and that one should therefore engage in sex to the best of his ability. These are the instructions of false gurus. In other words, because of the instructions of a foolish guru, one remains perpetually in material existence and suffers its tribulations. But if one is intelligent enough to take instructions from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as enunciated in Bhagavad Gita or the Sankhya philosophy of Kapila Dev, one can very soon attain liberation and be situated in his original position of spiritual life. The words Nijam Padam are significant. The living entity, being part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has the birthright to a position in Vaikuntha Loka, or the spiritual world, where there is no anxiety. Therefore, one should follow the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, Tektva deham punarjanma naiti mameti so Arjuna. After giving up one's body, one will return home back to Godhead. The Lord lives in the spiritual world in his original personality, and a devotee who follows his instructions, who follows the instructions of the Lord, approaches him. Mam eti. As a spiritual person, such a devotee returns to the personality of Godhead and plays and dances with him. That is the ultimate goal of life.
Astrinam dante idam yache punah punah Shriman rupa padam bhojo dhulisyam janma janmani Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Nityananda Sahodito Gaurade Pushpavanto Chitro Shando Tamonvado उग्रप्यनुग्रहेवायं स्वभक्तानां नृकेशरी केशरी वसुपोतानां अन्येषाम् उग्रविक्रमः।
हरे कृष्ण। Asatim adishate. In the previous verse, these asati have been described as avidushaha and abudhaha. Avidushaha means who do not know the goal of life, who have no knowledge of the goal of life, and abudhaha means, Prabhupada has translated it as a foolish rascal. So, jano janasya, in this way, the local populace, adesh, who follow the instructions of such janaha, who are asati, of such persons who are not aware of the goal of life, their destination or gati is also asati. Or in other words, it is a material destination, an impermanent destination. And yaya prapadyeta, and thus, trying to worship such janaha by following their instructions, when one surrenders to the instructions of such personalities, durattaya tamaha, one falls in insurmountable ignorance. Not just plain ignorance, but really that which is very difficult to overcome. So, based on this, Srila Prabhupada in his translation explains the concept of false gurus and what is the destination of foolish people who accept false gurus and follow their instructions. So, there are various ways that they instruct their disciples. The summum bonum of the instructions is eat, drink, and be merry. Enjoy life. That is the summum bonum of their instructions. Tvam tva avyayam jnanam amogha manjasa. You, my dear Lord, who are avyaya, who are indestructible, when you personally give the amogha jnana, or that which is free from all material impurities, that which is pure, without material contamination, anjasa, such knowledge very soon, if one surrenders unto such knowledge, then very soon, nijam padam janaha, one attains the Lord's own abode. So, Srila Prabhupada in the later part of the purport explains that how, if we accept instructions from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then one can attain the Lord's supreme abode. So today we are going to discuss basically 3 points, 1, 2, and 3. The first one is false gurus. The third point is our inheritance or birthright. These two are explained very clearly, and anyone who reads a purport can immediately find these 2 points, and the translation also gives these 2 points. False gurus and how it is very troublesome, the process and the destination by accepting those who are false gurus, and the second point that is covered is, and which I have put forward as a third point, is our birthright and how to reclaim it. What is that birthright? Once we were discussing about gurus, and I think it was Madan Gopal Prabhu who said that the idea of a false guru itself is a little imaginary. How can guru be false? Right? So if someone is false, then it cannot be a guru. But for us to make a discrimination, Srila Prabhupada is giving this distinction. What is false guru? What is true guru? Otherwise, guru is guru. There is no duality in Guru. Guru is a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, he has to be free from duality. There is no falseness or falsehood in Guru. They were simply even trying to think that the Guru may be false, may not be appropriate. But there may be cheaters in the garb of Guru, whom here the Srimad Bhagavatam is calling as Asati, Abhudaha, Avidushaha. And Srila Prabhupada is saying, these are so-called gurus, therefore false gurus. Sri Bhakti Vinod Thakur, in his Krishna Samhita, he describes that there are two types of false gurus. One is an external false guru and the other is the internal false guru. The Bahiya and the Antara. Who is the external false guru? The external false guru is someone who is a pretentious hypocrite. He's a pretender and he's a hypocrite. Generally, these two combinations are not easily achievable, even for the materialistic personalities, but these are specially empowered people who can pretend and also be hypocrites. So pretentious hypocrites who have no qualifications per se to be a spiritual master but claim to be a spiritual master are called as the external false gurus. And there is an internal false guru, and Thakur Bhakti Vinod says that the internal false guru is our mind, which always tries to take shelter of reason and logic in trying to understand transcendental subject matter. Reason and logic never lead to the proper conclusion, because they are based on a premise that I know things or I understand things and therefore my conclusion could be right, which itself is a very tottering platform, our own understanding. So that is this internal false guru that Thakur Bhakti Vinod says. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he calls the entire concept of false gurus the putanas of this world. And Bhakti Vinod Thakur also makes a reference to putana when he says, for those who are on the path of raga marg, on the path of attachment and love and devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it is important that one discuss the pastime of putana arriving in Vraja in the guise of a nurse so that one can become free from such misconceptions. So, in his understanding or the moral that Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives on the entire episode of putana coming into Braja and being destroyed by Krishna, he gives us understanding that putana represents the false guru. We'll come to this later on, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's understanding of putana. Right now, we'll see how Bhakti Vinod Thakur further gives understanding of such false gurus. So he's already categorized them into external and internal. Then he says, what is the characteristic or the trait of a false guru? The very first characteristic or trait of a false guru, especially an external false guru, but also applies to the internal, the mind, is that he accepts reason and logic or nyaya rather than siddhanta. He accepts nyaya or speculation as his spiritual master. Rather than accept the living representative of God as and his word as a spiritual master, such a false guru will always use logic and reasoning in establishing the absolute truth. So that will be his peculiar trait, always logic and reasoning. Even if there is quotation of Shastras, there will be an explanation of that based on logic and reasoning. And although the explanation of Shastras is all right, philosophical speculation is good. It allows the mind to be purified from mental speculation. However, precedence is given to, or more importance is given to, logic and reasoning. Shastras come as a support to logic and reasoning, rather than always accepting that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and then explaining how that is to be, that is correct. One will explain that how logic is correct and therefore Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now what happens is that when such a false guru is accepted, when one surrenders to such a instructing personality, then the basis of our spiritual life, the prana or the nourishment of our own spiritual life, becomes logic and reasoning. It simply becomes gyan rather than tattva gyan and tattva darshan. Because that very much is an attraction for a conditioned soul. It allows us the facility to use our own conceptual ideas. Thus, such a false basis or a platform of logic and reason gives rise to a lot of misunderstanding or even misrepresentation of the scriptures. Ultimately, one's constitutional position is misunderstood. There was one disciple of Srila Prabhupada who was very much interested when Srila Prabhupada was on the planet to learn Sanskrit, the language, the grammar, and also to go deep into understanding the verb, etymology and everything. So Srila Prabhupada encouraged him but also told him that he should be associating with his god brothers, having Vaishnava association. However, the path of logic is that it always leads one to seclusion. Because one is so much caught up in one's own mental wranglings that there is no way that one has time or even the inclination to engage in reciprocal emotional dealings with devotees. So there's no rasa there. There's only speculation going on. So ultimately, this particular devotee, he became very proficient in the Sanskrit language and slowly he started seeing the other disciples of Srila Prabhupada, his own god brothers, as being neophyte, as being less knowledgeable. And thus, he started believing within himself that such association is not good for me, because then I will come down to the neophyte platform. Now, he never paid instruction to his spiritual master's advice. Not just advice, but it was the words of his spiritual master that stay in the association of your god brothers. So putting aside the words of the representative, he took shelter of his own logic and reasoning, and ultimately at one point of time his conclusion was that Radha and Krishna are definitely the divine couple. But ultimately, beyond that, there's something more. There is something much more beyond that. So, this is what happens when we accept the path of such false gurus whose complete understanding of spiritual life is based on logic and reasoning. Our own nourishment becomes the same, and ultimately, we reach the wrong conclusion of our own constitutional position and duties. Gaur Govind Swami Maharaj gives an example of such false gurus and false disciples and their interaction in a humorous way. He says, there was such a false guru, a speculator who had a disciple who was well trained in speculation. So one day the guru came to his house. The disciple decided to serve the guru. He made a nice prasad, offered it to the spiritual master. The spiritual master had prasad. It was a little heavy. So obviously the disciple felt that I should offer some digestive spices to my spiritual master. Now, it is considered that haritaki, a special type of spice, is good for digestion. Now, haritaki is a type of dried spice which has an external covering like a bark and an internal seed. The external covering is good for digestion. The internal seed is useless. Now, he was a speculator, so he thought the external covering is useless, so he removed it, threw it away and gave him the seed. The spiritual master said, This is not good. The seed is important, not important. The seed does not allow good digestion, but the external, the bark does it. So he said, oh, now I understand your words. So all right. So after some days, he again invites his spiritual master. Again, there is a nice feast. He wants to offer some spices. This time he offers cardamom or long. Now he says, last time a spiritual master said the external is beneficial, the internal is useless. So cardamom also has an external bark-like thing, a stick, and an internal seed. So he took the external and threw away the seed and brought the external to his spiritual master. Now long, the seed, has all the necessary ingredients, not the external stick. And spiritual master said, what is this? The bark here is useless and the seed is important. So speculator's disciple said, what is this? Once you say that the seed is useless and the bark is important, now you say the bark is useless and the seed is important, I'm confused. So Gaur Govind Swami Maharaj says, this is the interaction between false gurus and false disciples, and this is the result. Bad digestion. Good food, bad digestion. So good shastra, but assimilation is bad. Conclusion is not proper. On the other hand, there is the idea of a Satguru. There is a Buddha and there is a Satguru. Sat, as the word states, is one who is situated in truth. The Satguru is someone who knows the path of proper attachment. The proper path of attachment, and who also instructs the disciples according to their qualification. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, this is the trait of the proper spiritual master. Now, this gives rise to two other traits of a false guru. The first trait that we have discussed is that the false guru uses logic and reasoning. Now, if a Satguru is someone who knows the proper path of attachment and can engage disciples according to their qualification, that gives rise to two more qualities or traits of the false guru. And they are, the second quality or the trait of a false guru is that does not know the proper path of attachment and still instructs disciples. And the third trait is, may know the path of attachment but instructs the disciples without considering their qualifications. I'll repeat it again. They do not know the path of attachment but still instruct disciples. Or they may know the path of attachment, they know the raga mark, but instruct disciples without qualification. One Srila Prabhupada was in South India and he was hosted by a judge who at a proper time, after properly giving him prasad and resting place, he came to him in seclusion and said, can you please discuss with me and tell me the pastimes of Krishna with the gopis as in the 10th canto, the Rasa Leela. Srila Prabhupada tried to avoid the issue. He said, no, I'm very much inclined to hearing this. Please, I'm requesting you. So the ultimate conclusion was Srila Prabhupada answered, you may be qualified to hear, but I'm not qualified to speak. Obviously, the real reason is that the person had no qualifications. But what to do? He was insistent. So, that is a Satguru. This distinction of a false guru and a Sadguru is given in the Vishnu Smriti, which has also been quoted by Sanatana Goswami in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. Paricharya yasho labha lipsu shishyad gurur nahi kripa sindhu susampurna sarva vidya visharada nishpriha sarvatah siddha sarva vidya sarva satpopakaraha nishpriya sarvatah siddha sarva vidya visharada sarva sankshay sankchetanalas analaso guru ahirta. In this Vishnu Smriti, the three traits of a false guru have been given: paricharya, yasha, labha, lipsu shishyad. The entire program of a false guru is to get his disciples, to get followers, and from them gain the following things. That is his entire program. That he would like to make followers, he would like to make anuyayis, but the entire his purpose is paricharya, they should worship him as good as God or even better as God. Then yasha, they must glorify him. Not just glorify him, but spread his glories around the world. They may make paraphernalia about his glorification, which a disciple has to carry with him, bear with him or her, to proclaim, this is my guru. So paricharya, yasha, and labha, and monetary gain. Good, comfortable style of living, good, comfortable style of travel. These are the inclinations of such a false guru. And that is all that he engages his disciples in. Trying to get as much name and fame, trying to get as much worship, and trying to get as much monetary gain, money from them. The Vishnu Smriti says, Gurur Nahi, that person is not a guru. On the other hand, the Vishnu Smriti gives a qualification of who is a guru? Guru Ahirtaha. This is a guru, the Vishnu Smriti says. And what is a guru? First of all, Kripa Sindhu. The guru has compassionate, come to deliver, come to save, come to give, sacrifice himself for the benefit of the entire humanity. Or he is broad-minded, Udaradil, Udaradhi. So Kripa Sindhu, that is the first quality, Vishnu Smriti says. Not always selfish, self-oriented, but selfless. And then the other qualities are Susampurna. He's always satisfied in himself. Kichhu Ichcha Nai. Doesn't desire anything for oneself. There's satisfaction. Satisfaction because this connection with Krishna. Srila Prabhupada would often quote that never was a time when I was away from Krishna. What does that mean? This is self-satisfaction. For those of us who do not have that connection with Krishna, there is always desire for accumulating things. Why? Because we have to fill up that void. There is a void. Krishna is not there. That connection is not there. So there is a void. We are dissatisfied. We need more and more and more. But Susampurna. And sada, sattva, always situated in goodness, always situated in righteousness. Never wants to do anything wrong. Even if wrong is done towards him, doesn't take it as a wrong. Because always on the path of righteousness, sattva. Upkaraha, and always ready to benedict others. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was once asked by Shishir Kumar Ghosh, there are so many, you know, dhongis, there are so many pretenders in your ashram, why don't you send them away? He said, at least they have a desire to come here to Krishna. So here they have a choice, whether they want to reform or not. But in the outside world, they have no choice. How can I send them away? This is called upkar. This is the quality of a Sadguru. Then there is Nishpriha, free from all material desires. Sarvatah Siddha, he is expert at whatever he does. Sometimes it is not discernible to the people around him why, how that person is working. But Sattva Siddha, expert. Only after something manifests, others realize, oh my God, this is what the vision was. He is always correct. Expert. Sarva Vidya Visharadaha. He is Visharad. He has got the essence, he knows of all knowledge. And Srila Prabhupada was asked, Srila Prabhupada, does the spiritual master know everything? He says, yes. Does the spiritual master know how many windows are there in this building in Chicago or somewhere? How many windows? So Srila Prabhupada answered, he knows everything that the Paramatma wants him to know. Not that the spiritual master sits counting number of windows. It's like counting sheep in your, you know, dreams, you know, how many sheep went. He doesn't need such exercise to keep his mind calm. He knows the essence. Sarva sankshaya sankcheta. And now, this qualification, it comes. He is capable of dispelling all the illusions, doubts, the sankshaya of his followers. And analaso. And never is he lazy in his duties. Never does he go away from his duties. Always ready to perform his duties. So although there are such wonderful qualifications of the Sadguru, and there are just three mentioned in the Vishnu Smriti of the false guru, still the camp of the false guru is so vast. So much to heart have they taken their qualifications. We find more qualified false gurus than Sadgurus. See their determination for paricharya, yasha and labha. Or otherwise we can see how these three qualities are really detrimental. On the other hand, the other qualities, we take it as ho jayega. Yeah, sattva siddhi, right? Shichadin sattva. Yeah, anytime I can do it. Nishpriya, give up material desire, sure. Ekadashi Nirjal, no problem. Nishpriya, giving up material desires. But still, we find the camp of Sadgurus to be rare. And the false gurus are like, you know, cockroaches. You find them everywhere. Just proliferate. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives the explanation of false gurus from the Putana's episode. He says, Kansa represents, he is the representative of materialistic leaders of religious institutions. And Putana is his instrument to seeing that anywhere the desire to be sincere Sadguru arises, kill it. So Kansa is, he's established his institution. There's a Christian joke in this regard. God and the devil were walking one day. And then they found one man, you know, maybe on 7 km Munshi Marg, Chowpatty, a person, man or a woman, suddenly pick up something valuable from the road. So there was a smile on God's face. So the devil asked him, what happened? Why are you smiling? He said, oh, that person has picked up the truth. Now saved, picked up the truth. And then God looked at the devil like, so now you're defeated here. That person has the truth now. There can be no falsity with him. And the devil is, you know, is totally undeterred. There's no fear or any reaction on his face. So God says, are you not concerned? And the devil says, no, I'll help him organize truth. Because organization means a system where one can either be properly situated or thoroughly exploited. There are both sides to organization. You have an army, it can be used for protection or it can be used for dictatorship. Organized, isn't it? So Bhaktisiddhanta says, Kamsa is the representative of those with materialistic desires and have become leaders in religious institutions. And Putana is his instrument. Not in establishing those institutions, but killing wherever there is the birth of Krishna, wherever there is an inclination for truth. Killing that, destroying that. And the only qualification for Putana is that to put on the brand of the institute. I belong to such and such institution. That's the only qualification. No Nishpriha, no Kripa, no, those qualifications are not looked at. You're ready to follow me? All right. Put on my label. You're ready to display that? Okay, now you are Guru. Putana. Bhaktis Vinod Thakur further explains what is the source of false gurus. Before I go on further, I would seek your permission and also would like to inform you that the class is going to go over time. So for those of you who are pressed for time, please feel free to leave whenever you want to. This topic, a little, I felt that we could discuss it. It's important, especially in today's scenario. The source of false gurus. What is the source of false gurus? And he introduces a concept of something known as a word known as dharma dhwaji. Dharma means religion, dhwaja means flag. Those who simply wave the flags of religion are called as dharma dhwajis. Srila Prabhupada gives a modern rendition of this term dharma dhwaji, a Western understanding, a Western word. He says the dandavat class. So dharma dhwajis are those who are always looking for dandavat people, those who can offer them dandavats. Or, in simple words, Bhakti Vinod Thakur says, the dharma dhwajis are those who are belonging to the class of hypocrites and fools, cheaters and cheated. They have no inclination to understand the real truth. All they want is to proclaim that they belong to a very wonderful sect. They belong to a very wonderful line. And that is all that they desire. They just want to wave the flag. I am a Vaishnava now because I have Tilak, I have Kanthi. Although I may be a Kali Chela, but no problem. Here, I am a Gauranga Chela. I am waving the flag of Gauranga Mahaprabhu. So Dharma Dhwajis. Because Dharma Dhwajis are people who put more emphasis on details than on the principle. They put more emphasis on the form than on the vastu. The object, the essence. In the early days, Govind Prabhu was explaining, or Gopinath Prabhu, rather Gopinath Prabhu was explaining that how when we had our Gurukul here downstairs, the LNHO, then the boys would have to come and sit here for some time for chanting. And there was this one boy who was really intensely chanting. If you intensely chanting in external, from the external form, it is like you're shaking your bead bag, shaking your head, and really making all grimaces and, you know, faces like that. That seems to be intense chanting. It could be, or it may also be a profile, you know, external profile. So here was this boy really going, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare, walking up and down. Somehow Radha Gopinath Prabhu was inspired to call this boy and ask him that. So how is everything? How is the chanting? Oh, very nice. Somehow he was inspired to check his bead bag. It was empty, no beads. Dharma dhwaji. Details, bead bag is there, walking is there, the mantra is there, but the substance is gone. This is a false guru. This is a source of a false guru. The Dharma Dhwaji class. Because more emphasis is placed on details than on the principle, slowly the entire process becomes degenerated. How you walk in, whether you have cleansed yourself or not, the externals are important than internal cleansing. The scriptures state, Shat karmo nipuno vipro mantra tantra visharadha avaishnava guru nasyat. Here is a person who's perfect in externals. Shat karma nipunaha. He's perfect expert in all the karmas of a brahmana and of a vipra. Mantra tantra visharadha. He's a visharad in all his mantras, chantings, the tantra, the rituals that is to be performed. Very expert, even may cry tears while performing his rituals. But a Vaishnava, if there is no connection to Krishna, if there is no surrender to Krishna, Guru Nasyat, Vaishnava Swapacha Guru. And there is someone who's born in the family of dog eaters. Maybe the food that he offers, maybe he does not eat the flesh of a dog, but the vessel in which it is cooked is his family members eat the flesh of a dog. He stays in the very house where dog eaters stay, touches the very people which are considered to be mochi. Externally, everything is against such a person being qualified to lead spiritual life. What to be speak of being a spiritual master? But scriptures say if such a person, despite all the external uncleanliness and disqualifications, if the principle is correct, Vaishnava, then Guru, that person is fit to be a Guru. So this is the distinction. The Dharma Dhvaji philosophy or that concept is a source of false gurus. Details more important than principles. Such Dharma Dhvajis, their biggest propaganda or purpose in life is to deify someone, to make someone larger than life. Or let us put it in simple words. Or Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains, making someone to be good as God, but not following or accepting what they are saying, what they speak, the instructions. Or in simple words, shouting, Jai Srila Prabhupada. And someone asks, what happened in the purport? What did Prabhupada say? I don't know. Don't remember. But at the end of class, there's a loud Jai Srila Prabhupada. Yes, the class, the presentation of the entire class may be a little, you know, boring. But purport is there, right? So the essence was there. The principle was there. What is most important was there. But that is forgotten. We are careless in that regard. But very, very principled in saying Jai Srila Prabhupada. And someone doesn't say, then criticize. Hey, you did not say you're not respecting Prabhupada. Prabhupada is our acharya, this, that. But what about understanding the purport? What about that? So there is this great eagerness to deify someone, because that gives a lot of benefits personally. But no eagerness to understand the instructions and accept that. Or if there is the inclination to understand instructions of a period of time, there becomes a callous attitude towards that instruction. Ye to padha hai. Already know it. Thus, making the Guru Tattva dead or temporary, thinking that the Guru Tattva is meant only for a specific point of time when we were, you know, beginning our Krishna consciousness. After that, now we've reached a platform, we don't need the Guru Tattva, it's finished. In other words, having the misconception that the Guru Tattva is temporary, it is relative. But the Guru Tattva is eternal. Krishna is in the eternal realm, so because we cannot speculate much on him, easy to accept, understand to some extent. Material energy, because we have direct connection with her, easy to understand. So Shakti Tattva, Vishnu Tattva, no problem. Guru Tattva, most problem. Because eternal realm, touching the material realm, somehow we cannot adjust it in our consciousness. Therefore, Shastras time again, spiritual Supreme Lord time and again says, the acharya should not be considered ordinary. The acharya is this, the acharya is that. The importance of the acharya is spoken. so that we do not take anyone to be ordinary, and we do not take the any ordinary person to be an acharya, and we do not take an acharya to be an ordinary person. There's a quotation of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur which I felt was very important, which gives us an understanding as to how the seed to either accept a false guru or become a false guru oneself is inherent in everyone, unless and until one is really, really very careful. He says, if I do not remember the lotus feet of Sri Guru at the beginning of every new year, at the beginning of every new month, at the beginning of every new day, at the beginning of every new hour, at the beginning of every new moment, then I am sure to fall into much greater inconveniences. If I do not remember his lotus feet, then that desire will become to dress in the garb of Guru. I will become liable to the bad desire of seeking to be worshipped by other people as Guru. It is this which constitutes addiction to other things other than the truth. Puja, la, pratishtha comes after, attached to that. And Bhaktisiddhanta says, this is the beginning of the birth of the fledgling putanas. Very soon they'll get wings to fly. But this is the beginning of fledgling putanas, their birth. A common way how this could happen is when the physical presence of the guru is not there, of an acharya is not there. That is when these seeds sprout. Either physically they are not present at the place where we are, or then they are physically not present on the planet. Either ways, their physical presence is not there. Then one start getting doubt. Oh, now my spiritual master is not there. I am alone. How am I going to take care of things now? How will devotional service and the devotional movement go on now? I am unqualified. But Guru is no longer there. His mission should go on forward. Therefore, since there is no one else around qualified enough, although I am unqualified, I will take on this position. And thus, we start mimicking the activities of the acharya. First it comes in our actions, then words. Never does it percolate down to the consciousness. Because the consciousness is corrupt with the desire of our own personal enjoyment. So this is a common way when the physical presence, because we have so much attachment to the physical presence than to the instructions of the spiritual master. As soon as that is gone, then we think we are left alone. Again, the principle of the Guru Tattva being eternal is being demoralized here. The Guru never goes away. Always there. Personally, through other sadhus, through his instructions. We need to seek out that. So this, Bhaktisiddhanta says, is the danger of falling into the false Guru trap. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives a warning, and before that, there is something important for us as followers of Srila Prabhupada and also the followers of Bhaktisiddhanta and Rupa Goswami, the Rupanugas. Very wonderfully, these acharyas have established a movement which allows sincere aspirants to practice devotional service simply. It is so simple. Once we come into this movement, we know what to do, we know what to avoid. There's no confusion there. Do this, do this, do this, avoid this, 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 everything clear. But then, wherever there is an organization, obviously the putanas will come. Because there is an easy facility to exploit the resources of the organization. Personally or collectively. However, these acharyas very intelligently have introduced safeguards. You know, they have introduced proper firewalls against the virus attack or other networks attacking us. Good firewalls are there. Twofold. And both have backing of scriptures of sadhu, acharyas. The first is they have instituted a regular program of hearing and reading Srimad Bhagavatam. And second, they've instituted a regular program of chanting the holy names of the Lord. Kalau nashta drishamesha pura narko dhunodhita. Everyone's eyesight has been completely destroyed. The eyes of knowledge have been destroyed. The eyes of religion have been destroyed by the advent of Kali Yuga. And the only hope is Srimad Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam itself declares that. So that is one. And the second is, Harer Naam, Harer Naam, Harer Naavaiva, Kevalam Kalau Nasteiva. And both of these have been instituted as a regular program within our movements. Anything else, if does not have the support of these two programs, slowly this bija, this seed for becoming putana will sprout. Many times, after I read this, I could really, really appreciate how many a times devotees have commented on sincere devotees in a movement regularly attending Bhagavatam classes, even if they are very, very senior. Typically, the names of the two wonderful brothers in Mayapur comes up, Jananivas Prabhu and Pankajangri Prabhu. Regularly, they hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Because the faith in scriptures, faith in Shastra, and they know this is a safeguard against the unnecessary weeds. However, there is something that is like a termite that will slowly try to eat away our devotional creeper. And that is the attitude of being judgmental and trying to take things in our own hands to cause improvement. And this is Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur's comment on this. He says, it is such worldly expectants who become patrons of the mischievous race of pseudo-teachers of religion. Worldly expectants mean we try to bring in our own worldly ideas of how to improve the process of hearing and chanting, other than that which has been established by the Acharya. There are so many things going wrong, and we, by using our own worldly ideas and our worldly conceptions, want to institute changes like this. Or in other words, thinking that a movement which has spiritual essence at its core can be improved by material considerations, especially by removing its essence, taking out its essence, and also giving support how the essence may sometimes be compromised. Quotations from the Acharya, quotations from scriptures may be given, how hearing and chanting may sometimes be compromised. If one is 24 hours engaged in seva, one can compromise with this. Taking such quotations out of context and giving it is the precursor for the mischievous race of pseudo teachers of religion, whose only function is to stifle the theistic disposition at the very moment of its suspected appearance. Or in other words, whenever such type of programs start proliferating, they will always attack at the first chance of the birth of pure Krishna consciousness. You are not practical, you do not know, you just keep quiet. Do you have any idea what is going on? So wherever there is the birth, suspected birth of Krishna, immediately Putana will be sent by Kamsa. See that they do not practice something that is the essence. So in short, the meaning of this warning by Bhaktisiddhanta is that those who strive with material means to expose and drive out Putana become her unwitting supporters. And there's a quotation from Aldous Huxley, which I found very pertinent in this regard. By the way, most of this have been taken from Bhaktisiddhanta's article in The Harmonist and Gaur Govind Maharaj's lectures, which has been compiled by Madhavanand Prabhu in his book, Krishna Kathamrita. Aldous Huxley, he put forth this wonderful, very, very eye-opening paragraph. No man can concentrate on lies, no man can concentrate his attention on evil or even the idea of evil and remain unaffected. To be more against a demon than for godliness is exceedingly dangerous. To concentrate more on the critical aspect than on the healthy aspect, to be more critical than being, you know, healthily engaged in hearing and chanting is exceedingly dangerous. Every crusader or someone who has intentions, good intentions at heart, is a crusader, someone who wants to establish something good. Every crusader is apt to go mad in this regard. He is haunted by the wickedness that he attributes to his enemies. It becomes a sort of a part of him. Parasvabhava karmani ya prashansanti nindati sa ashubhrashyati swarthat asati abhiniveshataha. This is from the 11th canto, Krishna supporting the same words of Aldous Huxley, but more deeply. He says, Krishna says, parasvabhava karmani ya prashamsati nindati. If we engage in simply external glorification or even deep criticism of someone's activities and behavior again and again and again, very soon, brashyate swarthat, very soon we lose sight of that which is beneficial to us. Why we came to Krishna consciousness, we lose sight of that. That goal is gone. Asati abhiniveshataha, and soon we dwell in the same murky waters as those whom we are trying to criticize. That is the nature of asati as compared to sat. Therefore, Prabhupada here is mentioning false gurus, and we may immediately by our superficial meaning say, therefore, these false gurus are the cause of all problems. The conclusion is, ultimately, there is a false guru in our spiritual life because we have made space for it. We have allowed the false guru of our mind, the internal false guru, to become our master, and thus externally, that is also mass manifesting. However, those who sincerely take to the process of Krishna consciousness every moment, every hour, every day, every month, every year for the rest of life, Krishna for them proclaims, Parthanaivaha namutra vinashastasya vidyate nahi kalyana krit kashyat durgatim tat gachyati. Bhagavad Gita 6th chapter. For someone who's engaged on this auspicious path, my dear Arjuna, there may be difficulties, there may be some slowing down sometimes, occasionally even stoppages, but because they persevere on this path, definitely they cannot reach durgati. They will not get the wrong destination. So this is false guru. The concept. Dharmadhvajis are the cause. This is desire for name, fame, the desire for personal gain is the fuel for our internal false guru, the mind. Logic and reasoning becoming the nourishment of a spiritual life rather than pure surrender. Then the false guru Putana comes up. Trying to bring about corrections by focusing on the bad rather than implementing the good simply makes those bad qualities arrive or take, you know, birth within us. Evil cannot be counteracted by evil. Evil has to be counteracted with good. Or as Einstein, it is supposedly Einstein who said, evil is simply the absence of good. It has no existence on its own. Good exists, evil doesn't. Where good is not there, evil present. Like that. So the next point is about our birthright. Again, I would like to say that if you feel like leaving, please leave. But it's going to be a little long class. What is our birthright? Because if you don't understand this, time and again, we have been, you know, exposed to the concept that human form of life is meant for self-realization. We quote it as shopkeepers outside quote the cost of their wares, you know. Kitne ka hai bhai? 40 rupiah. Kya hai bhai? Kya kar rahe aap log? Human life meant for self-realization. How does it percolate down? What is it? So we have to take shelter of this verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Vadanti tat tattva vidas tattvam yaj jnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabdyate. What does this verse explain? One explanation is at three levels. There is Brahman realization, Paramatma realization, and Bhagavan realization. But we have been in Krishna consciousness for some time. Can we be satisfied with just this? Or are we supposed to, as Rupa Goswami says in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, dive deep in the ocean of devotional ecstasy, of devotional love, and get the wonderful pearls of realization from there? Brahman is the aspect of Krishna without. Everywhere he exists. Because we are so much enamored by external facilities, we recognize devotees by external facilities, we recognize devotional service by external facilities, we recognize Krishna by external things. Today Krishna is looking nice because dress is nice, jewelry is nice. Today prasad is good because it smells good, it tastes good. Therefore first is Brahman aspect. Krishna is externally everywhere. He is the Vibhu Atma, the greatest. But then there has to be internalization also. That is Paramatma, smaller than the smallest. He is not just greater than the greatest or externally everywhere, but he is within all of us. He is the Upadrishta, he is the Anumanta. Thus he is within and without. Once we are completely disillusioned or give up the external factors, can we focus on the internal? And internally also Krishna is present. That is Krishna's greatness. So therefore, from the gross platform, we come to a much more subtler platform. That is Paramatma realization. Understanding Krishna as smaller than the smallest, as Anuatma also is present. We are not just the Anuatma. Krishna can be smaller than the smallest. Whenever we say Krishna is Vibhu, we are Anu. That is to make discrimination between individual soul and the supreme soul. However, Krishna is Anor Aniyan, Mahato Mahiyan. He is Anor Aniyan, smaller than the smallest. In other words, we can access him within ourselves also. And therefore, the yogis, the jnanis, their goal is to access him within. Pratyahara, they give up the external and go within. That is Paramatma realization. There we understand Krishna has a form. He is situated as our well-wisher. He is situated as our friend. He always accompanies us. And then there is Bhagavan. Bhagavan means Krishna is looking much more beautiful like never before standing next to Srimati Radharani, his potency. That is Bhagavan realization. Understanding the eternal pastimes that the Lord enjoys with his energy, allowing us to also participate in it. That is Bhagavan realization. When you see Krishna with Srimati Radhika, and see the beauty, how Krishna's beauty increases, or how all of his shad qualities, Aishwarya, increases. Why it increases? Because she's standing beside him. That is Bhagavan realization. That is what Krishna consciousness is about. It is not rejecting Brahman. It is not rejecting Paramatma and only going for Bhagavan. But understanding how Krishna is so compassionately allowing us to avail him and slowly takes away our focus from material objects to his aprakrit lila, his most divine pastimes. Not superficially, but by diving deep into the ocean of devotional service. And there, our birthright, we can understand what is our birthright. What Prabhupada says when he says, it is the birthright of this soul to attain the Supreme Personality of Godhead in Vaikuntha Loka. We have to understand this birthright of ours. The general religious propaganda or the goal in the entire world, and including some of us who practice Krishna consciousness superficially, is Brahman. Ultimately, if you look at what we are doing or what the world is offering, there may be the concept of God being the provider, God being the father, God being even someone who is practicing, you know, we can establish relationships in various ways. But ultimately, when we go deep, what satisfies us most are Krishna's qualities, energies, especially compassion or his powerfulness, his protection. That is what most of the world religions offer. God is almighty. God is a bread giver. God is a provider. And who is that God? Beyond these qualities, there is no understanding. Absolutely none. We are very hazy on this concept. So ultimately, it is just the Brahman, the Nirguna platform that we are approaching, beyond the Saguna, beyond this material realm, but still Nirguna. Nirguna in the understanding that beyond material, you know, sattva, rajas, tamas, beyond that, beyond the modes. That's it. Hence, Bhagavatam gives up the concept of Vishnu Bhakti, which is beyond this Nirguna. And many of us denigrate Vishnu Bhakti as being something very low. Therefore, we have to read scriptures and understand from acharyas. Sanatana Shiksha. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is explaining to Sanatana Goswami the journey of the living entity, and he explains the Vishnu Murtis, have we ever studied it deeply? He explains that Vishnu has got these four hands holding Shankha, Chakra, Gada, Padma. The lotus flower, the club, the conch, and the discus. And it's very beautiful to look at. And just a small change in the permutation of these, you know, sometimes the conch is upper hand, sometimes lower hand, and a different form of Vishnu is there. As beautiful, as attractive. With his own planet, with his own devotees. The Supreme Absolute, when he manifests his beauty, it is not static. It is dynamic. And what is the dynamism? Subtle changes are there. A small change and his Madhusudan. A small change and his Trivikram. What is our idea of Madhusudan and Trivikram? If anyone asks, we will read for a Bhakti Shastri exams, TLC. Maybe it is not included. And we'll say, oh, Madhusudan means Shankha here, Chakra there. Trivikram means Gada there, Padma there. Finished. And Sanatana Goswami, Lord Chaitanya is explaining, these are the beautiful Vishnu Murti forms. When Gopakumar enters Vaikuntha, before that we'll come to something else. The second thing about Vishnu Bhakti, first is Vishnu. Just imagine there is so much variegatedness just in one aspect of the Lord. He's holding different objects. What to speak of his wearing the Kirita, what to speak of his wearing the Vaijanti Mala, what to speak of his Pitambar. It is not static. We dress Gopinath in unlimited ways here. Oh, today this devotee has dressed, today that devotee has. We recognize that. In this realm, we find so much variegatedness. And when Sanatana Goswami has been explained the different Vishnu Murtis, we take it as, ho gaya, 24, finished, 24, I know. So there is this variety there. This is the taste, this is the rasa there. And then there is a description of Vaikuntha Loka given in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Just imagine. Right? Now for some of us, maybe now, maybe previously, most probably previously, what was the greatest attraction? We go to a nice scenic place, you know, maybe some beach in Bombay, maybe Disneyland. Attractive. For others, what is more attractive? Previously it was Lonavala, Khandavala, today it's distraught. But it was there because the mountains, the waterfalls, the trees. Some of us may go to Badrinath, it is attractive. Just seeing those serene mountains, the quietness there. People have commented that this is where I would like to give up my body. It is so serene a place. Muktinath, Badrinath. Externally, we may go to Vrindavan, Mathura, we may go to Ayodhya, and some places really we see the lotus flowers, ponds, very attractive. Now, this is external vision. And these places are attractive. Can we imagine how much attractive Swargaloka is? When the places here are so attractive, like, oh my God, the white water rafting in the Ganges was beautiful. What an experience. Can we imagine when Nanda Kuvera and Manigreva are bathing in the Mandakini and the damsels, when they come out, they give their fragrance to the waters there? That is Swarga. And some of us are very much attracted to serenity, Chitrakoot. So nice. Maharaj, you know, Guru Maharaj, when we went to Vrindavan of the old times, early 90s, it was such a quiet night village, nice village. Now it is so commercialized. We remember that and we find solace. Oh, that is external we have seen. Right? Can we imagine Maharloka and Tapaloka? What to speak of Brahmaloka then? This is all the territory that the Bhakti Lata Bij has to go through. These are all the attractions that we have to face. If a place like Lonavala, Khandala, or maybe even externally Badrinath, because of its mountains and things, can attract us, can you imagine what will happen to us through Swargaloka, Maharloka, Tambaloka, Janaloka, Brahmaloka? No wonder when Narad Muni was taking everyone, everyone stopped. You know, there's a Puranic story. Narad Muni gathered everyone, come behind me. Free entry into Vaikuntha. At every place, few people dropped off. What to speak of the Virija then? Free from all material modes. Can you imagine that? This extensive water with all. Serene quietness there. You know, after all the hectic passions of the day, you just put on a soft, soothing waterfall cassette, you know. Serenity. Imagine going to the Virija like that. And then you come to the externals of Brahman, brightness. And you find all those tapasvis and yogis in Brahman. See their brilliant effulgent forms, their serene faces. Is it easy to overcome that? And then we come to Vaikuntha Loka. That is the beauty that is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam of Vaikuntha. And what to speak of the Vaikuntha Vasis then? And we say, no, we are not interested in Vishnu Bhakti, Krishna Bhakti only. Is it so cheap? Do we really understand what is our Daya Bhak, our birthright? What has been given to us? Right? When Gopakumar saw, he entered Vaikuntha, he saw someone and he offered obeisances. Oh my God! I offer obeisances to you, my dear Lord. And the person became embarrassed and says, no, I am not Vishnu. Now, Gopakumar is not an ordinary soul who can mistake someone else for Vishnu. Now, these are the Vaikuntha Vasis, easily mistaken for Vishnu. He says, no, you have to look out for the Srivatsa. In one place, Srivatsa has been described as a thread of jewels in front of a mirror of jewels. Can we imagine Vishnu's beauty? And it is explained, like an example is given. In India, money means rupees, right? Kuch paisa do, paisa matlab rupya paisa. But if you go to America, paisa would mean dollars. So because provincially we grew up in a particular place and we have been exposed to only that particular scene in that particular province or chetra, we consider that to be all in all. But there are various levels of that concept and gradations. Similarly, in Vaikuntha, money is rasa. And rasa, taste. But it can also be translated as in loving intimacy between the Lord and his devotees. There are various gradations. Although it is all money, it is all rasa. Like the rasa of dollar is better than the rasa of Indian rupee. The rasa of Indian rupee is better than the rasa of Nepali rupee. But it is all money. So that is how the acharyas describe the understanding of rasas in the various levels of Vaikuntha realm. Now Vishnu Bhakti, in that 2.5 rasas are expressed. The Shantaras, the Dasyaras, and after a long association with Lord Vishnu, although I use the term long, time there is inconspicuous, remember. But still, for our understanding, a long association with Vishnu, some develop a Sakhyaras with Lord Vishnu. Vatsalya and Madhurata in its basic sense is absent. Lakshmi ji serves, she is the wife of Vishnu, but she is always at his feet. At the most, she occupies his chest as a Srivatsa, that's it. So 2.5 rasas is expressed there, and that intimacy is expressed. But then when one comes to Ayodhya, then Lord Ram has a mother and a father and a brother and friends. So the rasa becomes more deep and more. There's Vatsalya added. There is Madhurta added also. There's conjugal rasa added. But only with one wife, Sita. So Madhuri rasa is there, but only with Sita. So when he goes to Mithila, the ladies of Mithila are attracted to him. But he says, sorry, he doesn't even reciprocate. When he goes to the Dandakaranya forest, the rishi is attracted and he says, no, no, next incarnation. In fact, in the absence of Sita, when he has to do yajnas and he makes all the murtis of Sita, they melt in ecstasy seeing his beauty and say, we are Sita, don't leave us behind. He says, no, 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 there's only one Sita for me. All of you, when I come as Krishna, you'll become gopis and come. So there are all of these who are desirous of reciprocating with Krishna in a particular, or with Ram in a particular rasa, but that Madhuri rasa is limited only to one. Then comes Dwarka and Mathura, where Krishna reciprocates in this Madhuri rasa in 16,108 individually beautiful energetic forms. They're not simply expansions, but they are individual goddesses of fortune. And Krishna reciprocates with each one of them individually. Satyabhama, Vampanthi. Krishna reciprocates with her like that. She, Rukmini, is a little quiet and peaceful. Krishna reciprocates with her like that. With Jambavati, he reciprocates in a different way. Now within that, with his friends like Uddhava, very intimate. With elders like Ugrasen, offer respect. However, still there is limited scope. There are many who are attracted to Krishna. When Krishna comes into Dwarka, all the ladies are waiting for him. And he's coming back from Hastinapur and they're attracted to him. 16,108. And then we come to Vrindavan. And there it is unlimited. There are unlimited cowherd boyfriends, unlimited cowherd girlfriends. Everyone feels Krishna is my son. Nanda, Sunanda, everyone. So all the rasas are perfectly reciprocated in Braj. However, there is a dichotomy, there is a slight, there's a topic here which causes our intelligence to become bewildered. Because more the rasas become intense and more there's reciprocation, the simplicity of the externals increases. Brajdham is simply a young village, is a simple village. There's a river flowing, they every day take bath in the river, there's cow tending. The gopis, they carry milk, curds. Now, if something goes better and better, then according to a concept, it should become much and more, more and more Aishwarya. This is our understanding. Therefore, the Shastras say, Achintya khaluye bhava, na tams tarkena yojait. Never try to understand these concepts of Achintya through tarka. It has to be understood through the descending process. This is Brajadham. Its simplicity is there, but it is not our simplicity. Not the way we think simplicity is. Its simplicity is glorious. There's Chintamani Dham. The gopis, they are ornaments, they simply grow out of the soil. Krishna did that through that Mukta Charita pastime. He put in some pearls, pearl tree came, with pearls of unlimited colors, never before seen. That is Chintamani. So all the Aishwarya is there, but that Aishwarya is simple. So this is a concept which even I don't understand. But because the Acharyas have put it forth, this is what Srila Prabhupada says when he says in this purport, please, as a spiritual person, such a devotee returns to the personality of God and plays and dances with him. This is the ultimate goal of life. When Rupa Goswami saw Lord Chaitanya doing that is when he composed his verse, Namo Mahavadan Nyaya. This is Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu. A chance to dance and play with Krishna. Even Brahma cannot understand this. With his four heads, we have only one. And on this earth planet. Brahma was bewildered. He couldn't understand it at all. The only way he could understand is said, my dear Lord, because of high birth problem, give me a low birth in your next incarnation. That is where I'll come to understand. It's so difficult to understand. Achintya khalu ye bhava. And this is our birthright. This is the daya bhak. Therefore, Rupa Goswami composed that verse. When he saw Lord Chaitanya distributing, he said, although Prayag is the culmination, it is a meeting point of three rivers. These are big, big rivers, each of them known for causing floods in other regions. But Prayag never saw a flood. Till that time, Lord Chaitanya came and flooded the entire city with the chanting of the holy names. And when Rupa Goswami saw Lord Chaitanya giving this birthright to everyone free of cost, he said, Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate. This is the most munificent incarnation that is distributing such Krishna Prem so very freely. Hence, in this translation and the purport also, it has been mentioned, therefore, your Lordship gives knowledge that is eternal. Hence, we have to receive knowledge from Krishna. That is eternal and transcendental knowledge, as enunciated in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. This was my second point, or rather third point. And in short, because the third point will be covered more specifically in the coming days, and especially on 24th of this month, Tuesday, Balaram Jayanti. If we have to receive knowledge from Krishna, how does one receive knowledge from Krishna? The Mundaka and Shvetashvatara Upanishad, in that verse, Nayam Atma Pravachanena Labhyo, they say that unless and until Krishna reveals himself, no one can understand him. Tanum Swam Vivrunate Tashesh Atma Labhya. That person can get that benefit of seeing Krishna when Krishna personally reveals himself to him. How does Krishna personally reveal something to him? So here is where I'm going to use three terminologies in short that under the meaning of these words. One is known as Ashraya Vigraha Bhagavan. The second is Vishaya Vigraha Bhagavan. And third is Acharya. Vishaya Vigraha means that object or personality who is the object of all love. So Krishna is Vishaya Vigraha Bhagavan, who is the object of all love. And Ashraya Vigraha Bhagavan means that personality who is the abode of all love. The Ashraya Vigraha Bhagavan is the abode of love where Krishna finds reciprocation being the object of love. And the Ashraya Vigraha reciprocates with Krishna because Krishna is the object of all love. Now this statement has been given by one of our Acharyas. Unless Ashraya Vigraha Bhagavan does kirtan, Vishaya Vigraha Bhagavan is not revealed. His name, his rupa, his guna, his leela is not revealed. So, unless and until that which reciprocates with the object of love, the abode of love, explains preeti, prema, bhakti. And how is that explanation given? By doing kirtan, by explaining the glories of the Vishaya Vigraha Bhagavan, nothing can be revealed to conditioned souls like us. And that is where Acharya is important. Acharya means Achinoti yah shastram iti acharya. Someone who perfectly embodies the scriptures is an acharya. An acharya is someone who practices in life those precepts and teaches to his disciples the same precepts is an acharya. An acharya is one who through guru parampara or through the parampara has received the knowledge of the Vishaya Vigraha and therefore can distribute to others because that acharya is Tattva Darshi. And hence, the scriptures always say, before even beginning to worship Krishna, there has to be Acharyopasanam or the worship of Sri Acharya. Or in our case, Acharya means Sri Guru. So that is the Guru Tattva. The Vishaya Vigraha explains, we may read the Bhagavad Gita hundreds of times. So many times Srila Prabhupada has commented about great commentators on the Gita. Their translations have been read worldwide. And Srila Prabhupada says about one politician saint and another politician who has made. Their problem was they did not have a spiritual master. They commented on the Gita. They had understanding of the Gita, but they did not have a spiritual master. There was no Acharya Upasana. So although we may read the Bhagavad Gita so many times, it still remains a mystery. Why? Because the way to understand Vishaya Vigraha is through upasana or service of Ashraya Vigraha or the Guru Tattva. Therefore, Guru Seva is so very important. And what is Guru Seva? Krishna explains that in the Bhagavad Gita. Pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya. And here the concept of pranipat or surrender is explained. Unless one is surrendered, even if you go and sit in front of an exalted personality, if one is not surrendered, one will hear the words, but the faith in those words will not be there. Because faith in those words is not there, therefore there is no mercy. Because the words or the spoken words of the Acharya carry the mercy of the Lord. Yes? Prahlad said, I am here. Narsingha, Lord Narsingadev had to manifest from there. Satyam vidhatum dijabhritya bhashitam. To prove the words of a devotee true, Lord Narsingha manifested. Srimad Bhagavatam says that. So the mercy is carried through the words of the spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada would always, therefore, so many times would comment, my spiritual master saw that I would like to hear from him. Many times I would not understand because he would give such high concepts and his Bengali was really very erudite. But I had faith in his words. Simply by hearing, I knew. In the ultimate sense, I would understand. So, we may hear, but if you do not have surrender, there is no trust in the words. Because there is no trust in the words, there is no mercy. Because there is no mercy, there is no transformation. Because there is no transformation, no faith arises. Because no faith arises, there is no surrender again. It's a loop. Hence, pranipatena tad vijnanartham sagurum eva abhigachet. First we have to go and surrender to the proper acharya, the bona fide acharya. Once when Srila Prabhupada was having a discussion with one pandit in New York, a shastri of Sanskrit, the conclusion finally was, he said, can you explain the etymological meaning of this, the verb root of this word? Srila Prabhupada said, why should I? No. You claim yourself to be so great, so you explain the meaning of this Sanskrit. He said, you are a Sanskrit teacher, you explain. He said, no, I want you to explain. Srila Prabhupada said, first you surrender like my disciples, then I explain. I mean, I'm not obliged to explain to you just because you're challenging me. But if you are my disciple, it becomes my duty to explain. It is my responsibility to explain. It is my dharma to explain to my disciples. So first surrender, then the words become clear. Now, A Sadguru is manifest to people who are simple-hearted and completely surrendered, and is never manifest to someone who's unsurrendered, someone who's a cheater, someone who's a pretender, someone who's a hypocrite, someone who's envious of the Guru. Na martya buddhya sveta. Srimad Bhagavatam says, one should never be envious of his bona fide spiritual master or someone who's kapat or a crooked person. Sadguru has two features. One is known as kripa, the other known as vanchana. Kripa means mercy, vanchana means cheating. What is that? Therefore, in the Chaitanya Leela, this example is given of Pundarik Vidyanidhi. When Gadadhar Pandit first approached Pundarik Vidyanidhi, he was bewildered. Is this a yogi or a bhogi? So someone who does not have the proper inclination, who is a cheater, who is a hypocrite, a spiritual master may sometimes manifest his vanchana side. You want to be cheated? Here. You may think that I am an ordinary person. But someone who is really sincere, surrendered and is crying for the shelter of the spiritual master, please Krishna, somehow or the other I am frustrated with all my attempts to get some satisfaction in the material world. Send me your representative whom I may serve sincerely throughout my life eternally. Then the kripa aspect of the Sadacharya manifests. That is why even in a spiritual movement we find some disciples become asar, because they access the vanchana side of the spiritual master. Oh, the spiritual master is wrong. He is contradicting all the scientific understandings. And some who access the kripa aspect of the Sadguru, tremendous advancement. They become the via media to spread the mercy of Guru to so many other conditioned souls. Hence, there is no option to Acharya Upasana, which is again of two types, Vapu Seva, Vani Seva. Both are very subtle. See, both Ramchandra Puri and Ishwara Puri were engaged in Vapu Seva. One became a disbeliever later on. The other became the spiritual master of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Gauranga. Because one considered the Vapu of the Supreme of his Guru to be something which he could embellish with his logic and reasoning, and the other simply considered it to be his worshipable object of service, understood the mood of the spiritual master, went beyond all of his limitations. What is it that, how I can really serve my spiritual master? And whatever was his mood when he was feeling separation, he would give quotations from the Srimad Bhagavatam which would enhance that mood of separation of Madhavendra Puri Goswami. That is real Vapu Seva. And Vani Seva, so many times, even when Srila Prabhupada is there, once he mentioned, they always say, Prabhupada said, where did I say it? Right? On the other hand, there are others, like Srila Prabhupada himself, my spiritual master told me at Radhakund, if you ever get money, print books, Vani Seva. Throughout his life, he understood that. And he was ever grateful to his disciples who assisted him in that capacity. So again, these are very deep topics. This is the Guru Tattva. Balramji is the source, the abode of Guru Tattva. He is the Guru Tattva personified. It is so nice that these verses on the Guru Tattva are going on, culminating on Balaram Jayanti. So wonderful that we can meditate. False Guru, our birthright. Let us be very much aware of it. And the only way to access that birthright is Acharya Upasana. Service unto the bona fide spiritual master. Vapu, Vani, full faith and surrender. That is when the mercy comes. Thank you very, very much. Hare Krishna. Maybe I should beg forgiveness for allowing this class to go on so long. Then, a preparation for Balaram Jayanti. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Jai Nitai Gaur Premanande. Hari Hari Bol.